This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can watch our TV show on Free Speech TV every weekdays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. Nearly 40 years ago, a major revolution took place in Iran to overthrow the Western-backed Shah. The Iranian Revolution was a pivotal moment in world history that continues to have repercussions today. A legacy of the late 70s that remains intact in today's Iran is the imprisonment of dissidents. Iran's infamous practice of incarcerating people for political reasons forms the basis of a beautifully written story called Remembering Akbar Inside the Iranian Revolution by my guest Behrouz Ghamari. Behrouz Ghamari is a professor of history and sociology at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. His earlier books include Islam and Dissent in Post-Revolutionary Iran and Foucault in Iran, Islamic Revolution After the Enlightenment. He now joins me to discuss Remembering Akbar. Welcome to the program, Behrouz Ghamari.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. So first, explain what this book is. It's fiction, but it's not really.
Yes, I call the book an autobiographical novel. The reason is that, you know, this is primarily based on my own experiences being in prison in Iran in 1981 till 1985. But then, you know, all the characters in the book are people with whom I spent time in prison, with whom I was involved in the revolutionary movement. But the characters also are composite. These are people who have different moments in their lives, and I pull them together as the presenting one single character in the book. So in that sense, I call it a novel because the characters don't correspond one-to-one to people I knew, but they're also based on real events.
Is the character of Akbar the narrator? Is that basically the narrator of the novel? And if so, is that who you identify closely with?
Yes. Akbar is the person that narrates this story, and that character is based on my own involvement.
So let's talk first about, before we get into the details of the book, of your own experience. You said 1981, you were imprisoned for several years. How did that come about? Who were you in revolutionary Iran during the late 70s, early 80s? What landed you in prison?
Yeah. I was an activist student from late 1970s during the previous regime, the Shah's regime, and I was part of a leftist student group with very strong Marxist tendencies and played a major role in the revolutionary movement that toppled the Shah's regime and brought in the Islamic Republic. After the revolution, I was also part of a power struggle that the new regime tried to consolidate its own power, and we continued our struggle for different kinds of understanding that we had of what the revolutionary movement was all about. And of course, after the revolution happened in 1979, and it took the government 2 years before they started a massive arrest of the opposition groups. After one of the opposition groups started the armed struggle against the government in 1981, in one of the incidents in that moment, this opposition group, the Mujahideen organization, put in explosives in the headquarters of the ruling party and killed 72 people of the ruling party, including like 20 members of the parliament and the head of the judiciary and key figures of the revolutionary movement that were part of the government. So after that, the government basically started a massive arrest of any opposition figure they knew. Since I was a spokesperson of the student group that was very active against the government, I was arrested very early on in that period of what I call the Reign of Terror. So I was arrested in 1981.
And so you were in this prison that you set your story in, Evin Prison in Tehran?
Yes, I was in Evin Prison, and I was tried after a few months after when that I spent in prison, and was sentenced to death. And I spent the next 3 years on death row in Iran, in Evin Prison.
What were those years like? And of course, that's part of what your book illustrates. But I mean, it's unimaginable for anybody who's gone through that experience to realize how obviously traumatizing it can be. And I'm wondering if there's any way you can express, even in a few words, what those years were like. I mean, you were essentially disappeared into a prison, only to emerge in an unlikely way years later. Probably you didn't even realize that you would end up being let loose, right?
That's correct. Very few people actually survived the death rows of the Evin prison, and I'm perhaps one of the few people who survived after many years of spending on death row there. But the reason I actually wrote the book was that to sort of change the narrative and the way we understand these moments of trauma, because when we look at these moments from the outside, often the only part and dimension of this experience that people see is the tragic part of it. So the narrative of tragedy is very important. And but when you look at it from inside, and I wanted to sort of bring people the ability to see it from inside, that it was not, that experience was not all about tragedy, suffering, and pain, although it was a big part of it. But the way suffering and pain was interpreted, the way people lived through that suffering and pain, is also an important part of the story. It was always the case that whenever I talked to a number of friends of mine after I was released and came to the US, that we had so many moments of humor, so many moments of hilarity, so many moments of bonding, so many moments of love and caring. And I wanted to write something that highlights those moments. To give a different kind of sort of narrative about how people lived under those very harsh and brutal circumstances.
Yeah, and that's what's so remarkable about the book. Can you tell us about some of the various characters in this autobiographical novel, Remembering Akbar, these people whose lives you paint based on, as composites of real people that you had those ties with?
There are a variety of people. One of the I was going to say that one of the good things about prison was, but maybe good thing is not the right word to use. But one of the positive things that the prison life had was that all of the people I spent time with were political prisoners, and
So
so in a
ironically, the
sense.
prison puts you in closer contact with like-minded folks.
Well, they were, I wouldn't call them like-minded, because there were a variety of people there, that some of them were involved in armed struggle. Some of them had assassinated people. Some of them had read a book. Some of them had written books, like myself, And so they're very, and also with coming from a variety of political positions. So but it's an interesting sort of moment to sort of think about this, that because one of the issues that I grappled with when I'm writing about the prison experience is that how does one write something that goes and then transcends beyond this kind of notions of good and bad, the prisoner and the prison guard, evil and good, and because there are all kinds of varieties and shades of characters on both sides of this dichotomy. And I wanted, again, I wanted to draw a more complex picture of this relationship with so many of these characters without being judgmental, without trying to indict anyone, without trying to to draw a very clear boundaries between where good ends and where bad starts. And you can see that in the different kinds of characters that I talk about in the book, of course.
So would you be willing to read a section from your book, Remembering Akbar, so that our audience can get an understanding of it? Because so much of the book, in fact, all of the book is just these vignettes that you then weave together. So it's hard to kind of, you know, express it all in a few short words. So maybe a taste of the actual book itself.
Okay, sure. As you said, you know, the book is basically a series of character portraits, and these characters somehow connect with one another, and obviously the main character, who is Akbar, is the place in the book that for the first time we are introduced to Akbar, and I just read this passage from that part of the book. This is how it goes. "Oh, by the way," my inquisitor said nonchalantly on his way out of the room, "your alias is Akbar." I sat frozen on a classroom chair facing the wall in the opposite corner of the room. He closed the door quietly and took every last smidgen of the stale air in the room with him. "They know. Earlier we had talked for more than 2 hours about my views of the revolution and his. He told me how disappointed he was when the turn of the events after the revolution. I tried to assure him that all revolutions face the same challenges. You shouldn't blame yourselves, I consoled him. You can't control everything. Things are going to work out in the end. I tested on him the best cliches available in that small windowless room. But why have you questioned every single decision of the imam in the last 2 years? He asked, playing along. I know mistakes were made, but don't you think that you should have exercised more patience? His young voice did not allow him to assume the fatherly pitch he was striving for. Yes, I confessed, but at that time we couldn't appreciate the imam's wisdom in appointing a prime minister who was self-admittedly weak in advancing our anti-imperialist cause. We wanted the revolution to march ahead and obliterate all remnants of the old regime and its Western supporters. So then it goes on. Yeah.
My guest, Behrooz Ghamari, reading from his book, Remembering Akbar, Inside the Iranian Revolution. Akbar, the narrator of the book, the character that Behrooz identifies with through your own personal experience inside an Iranian prison. Now, this exchange between a prison guard and a prisoner is also a feature of the book. Can you hearken back to those moments in your own experience? What were those moments like? Because, you know, prison guards are often, their treatment of prisoners and their own behaviors are very much shaped by the position they find themselves in as prison guards, right?
No, absolutely. Again, we need to remember that these are early years, months of after revolution, and many of the people who became prison guards and interrogators, many of the interrogators, for example, were the same kind of people I knew from the university. Actually, my own interrogators was one of the people I knew at the university. So this is one of those interesting moments that it suddenly the revolution threw different groups of people who were part of the same movement on different sides of this political struggle. And there were so many different moments of confusion, and many guards and interrogators truly, genuinely believed that they were advancing the cause of the revolution still at the time. And they genuinely believed that they were trying to eliminate forces of counter-revolution. For that reason, there was a lot of confusion at that moment. But as years passed by, the prison became more institutionalized, the guards became more trained, and very sort of programmed on the basis of how to interact with prisoners and how to deliver their duties without any kind of ideological and emotional investment. So the first year or so, you could see a lot of different kinds of possibilities of conversations and confusion. But after the first year, these windows were more and more closed, and the prison became more of a sort of a bureaucratic institution with a very, very rigid and brutal regime of control and surveillance.
And of course, the Iranian Revolution holds so many lessons for people involved in, you know, ongoing revolutionary struggles, even, for example, some of the Arab Spring revolts and so many places in the world where we have, you know, periodically these upheavals and then these struggles to remake society. And sometimes things don't go, often, in fact, things don't go the way we hope for them
to go.
So finally, then, as you look back on those years, and you look back on how Iran has turned out today, it is in many ways sort of a contradiction. How do you see those years of your experiences in prison as helping you understand today's Iran? Did you have experiences where, through your close interaction with people of different political stripes, you have a better understanding of the people who vehemently defend the revolution today?
Right. I mean, I myself still defend the revolution because I think the revolution itself was an important historical moment. That's partly the subject of my other book, Foucault in Iran, I opened this conversation there, that what is really historically and politically important is the experience of revolution itself. Once people go, a nation goes through that experience, and that lived experience leaves a very important mark on the historical collective consciousness of a nation. And as you mentioned, most often revolutions don't turn out to be the way people imagined it to be. But nevertheless, these experiences would leave a mark, and it generates a different kind of collective consciousness that we actually witness in Iran today, that I think that there is a certain kind of political maturity among Iranians, and the way they understand their own situation, the way they interact with their political system, I truly believe is a legacy of the revolution, 1978-1979 revolution, that there is a reason that when you see that there are all these chaotic situation, very violent situation everywhere in the Middle East today, Iran is relatively stable. Iran is relatively sort of has come to terms with negotiating different kind of political struggle that does not allow the sort of the free fall of this kind of violent moments that we witness in other places around the Middle East. So in that sense, I think the revolution taught the Iranian nation an important lesson.
In recent years, there have been some moments of violent explosions, if you will, with Iranians taking to the streets and demanding much greater, particularly personal freedoms that they have, you know, been forced to live without.
Absolutely.
And we can't ignore those.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think that's actually a part of what my argument here is, that you know, people understand that there is a logic to these mass movements, that they can bring their demands into the streets, they can push the government to listen to their voices, they can obviously, you know, demand greater freedoms and issues of social justice. But at the same time, they are very conscious of the limits of their own power. They are also very conscious of how much they can push and what is the time for them to step backward. And I think that's an important lesson, that for all people around the world, that's an important lesson to learn, that people should be completely aware of the limits of their own power and what are the right moments, what are the wrong moments for pushing for greater demands of freedom and social justice.
Would you say then finally that the Iranian revolution continues today, that it hasn't fully realized its potential, especially as somebody who started out as a Marxist?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, one of the key features of the Iranian revolution is that I always say that this is an unfinished revolution. Mm. And this revolution continues. And both at the political state level, that we see so many different factions constantly are still fighting one another, and at the level of state and civil society and popular actors that who still trying to push further the demands of the revolution. So Iranian revolution is really an unfinished revolution. And we should always remember that revolutions take time. And even if you look at the most important revolution in history, French Revolution, it really took more than 60 or 70 years before the French Revolution finally came to a point to try to manifest the main demands of that revolution. So I think we need to look at this as an unfinished project.
Well, Iran has barely 40 or something, what, 38 years, before 38, 39 years since its revolution. Behrouz Ghamari, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
My guest is Behrouz Ghamari, a professor of history and sociology at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. And we've been talking about his new book, Remembering Akbar, Inside the Iranian Revolution. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com and on Twitter at twitter.com/RUWithSonali.